I'm actually filling in. The real Jack Lesenberry is a much taller man. Actually, my name is Ringo Starr, and this is John Paul. You're too young. You're too young. But anyway, thank you for coming here. And I don't know why anyone's concerned about Michigan's infrastructure. I walked in 5 minutes ago, and I left my home in the Detroit suburbs at 3:45. So there's obviously nothing wrong. But we have some people. I run my mouth about it a lot on the radio, but tonight we've actually assembled some people who really know about it. So first of all, on my far left, not necessarily politically, is Arnie Frohbaum, am I doing your name right, sir, who is an expert on highway issues. He's been with the Michigan Department of Transportation for a long time. Usually when I ask a question about highways, somebody runs and asks him so they can give me an intelligent answer. Sitting next to him is Michael Nystrom, who's the Executive Vice President of the Michigan Infrastructure and Transportation Association. I'm not sure if he's the guy to blame for all it's all messed up, but I suspect not, but he has a good overview. And right next to me is my personal favorite economist, I'm on the record as saying that, Charles Ballard, who's professor of economics at Michigan State. He's the author of a book called Michigan's Economic Future, which everybody in the state should read if they want to have some understanding of the state in the future and the challenges we face. So what I propose to do is ask our panelists a few questions and then turn it over to you. I'll be the moderator. All I ask is that you ask a question, not make a speech. I'm half German, so I know how to cut you off if you screw up. But first of all, so I'm going to start out by asking Professor Ballard, if you can talk about, I heard today on the radio driving here that the country has a shortfall of $1.4 trillion they need to bring this nation's infrastructure up to speed. I wonder if you could just say something about the true state of Michigan's infrastructure and what the economic cost of neglecting it have been.
Well, as you say, nationally, a deficit of $1.4 trillion, that's real money. But Michigan, in many ways, is worse. Certainly our roads are worse. And what's the real cost? Well, the real cost is Flint, children who may have long-term deficits, certainly a black eye to the state in terms of its reputation. There are a lot of costs associated with poor infrastructure. One of them is that last year I had to have both front rims replaced. If I were living in a first world country and driving on first world country roads, I wouldn't have had to have my rims replaced. But with the quality of the roads that we have, one estimate that I saw is Michigan motorists spend about $500 million a year on repairs that would not be necessary if we had good roads. And so that's what I would call a hidden tax. You know, I think the central thrust of policy in Michigan for the 33 years that I've lived here in Michigan has always been cut taxes, cut taxes, cut taxes, as if we could cut taxes and there would be no repercussions. But my front rims having to be replaced and children in Flint who can't drink the water or shouldn't have drunk the water, those are real costs.
Thank you. Mr. Nyquist, let me go to you. Well, actually, I'm going to Arnie for a quick question. The legislature last year, with some fanfare, passed what we were told was going to be a bill to fix the roads. How adequate is it?
It's a little bit adequate, I'd say.
A little bit adequate.
It solves the problem for the short term.
How short a term?
What it will do is it won't restore the roads back to the condition that they were around 2006 or 2007 when we had about 90% of the state highway system in what we call at least good condition. Right now we're on a path that's going to lead to the slow degradation of the state highway system and local roads all across the country.
So what you're telling me is this bill has us falling apart slightly more slowly.
That's right. It's all it will do is slow the rate of degradation of the road system.
If I were God or Charles Ballard and I called you up and I said, Arnie, what would it cost to fix Michigan's roads to the point where they ought to be for a first world country? Uh-huh. What would the true cost be?
Well, the last time a study group was convened to try to come up with that number, the number that came out was close to an additional $3 billion a year.
$3 billion a year for how long?
Pretty much indefinitely.
That's more than Miguel Cabrera makes, I think. Exactly. But again, the cost of not doing, is the cost of not doing that greater than the cost of doing that?
It's probably in the same neighborhood. The numbers that Professor Ballard quoted are certainly close to the close to where it where the true numbers are. It's a very hard thing to estimate because it the cost of bad infrastructure shows up in so many ways and so many parts of the economy that are not immediately visible.
But, on that cheery note, let me go to Michael Nyquist. What exactly does your infrastructure group do, and why haven't you done it?
Well, Ringo, my name's Mike Nystrom, not Mike Nyquist.
I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon.
He was trying to make you a Kentucky Derby champion.
For accuracy,
yeah, I hear that I won the Kentucky Derby, so
I'm
congratulations
glad.
To me. Thank you very much.
Mr. Nystrom. I stand embarrassed, or sit embarrassed. So what do you folks do? What's your main thrust?
Well, we represent the construction industry, the folks that are out there attempting to rebuild our roads, our bridges, our sewers, our water lines. The challenge is that we've been putting a Band-Aid on when we've needed major surgery. It touches on what both Charlie and Arnie have talked about here. But in the end, we keep falling further and further behind as we all sit here and talk about it, and as they sit down there and talk about it.
Right. Well, you know, this is a serious question. When I was young, one of the advantages of being old is you can look back. There really wasn't a lot of controversy about things like fixing the roads. There might be controversy how to do it, but this is, and in most Western countries, even in most countries, you use something like the road, something like the water, you fix it. Why don't we have that attitude here?
You know, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s.
Right.
The previous generation, they decided that it was important to invest in our infrastructure.
Right.
Then there was a shift. It was a shift in social policies, went to corrections, went to education,
right.
Those types of things. Not saying those things are wrong, but once the priorities shifted, there was less of a focus there. It was put in place, and there was no consideration for long-term maintenance.
Arnie?
Yeah, that's right. There's been a change over the last, I'd say, 20 or 30 years. Back when most of our current road system was built, say in the 1960s and 70s, the money that people paid in through their fuel tax and their annual license plate tax, which at that time was maybe $30 or so, you'd send that money into Lansing and it would be redistributed out to the cities and counties and the state highway department. And that was sufficient to not only keep the roads in good shape, but gradually pave the entire county system almost. And more than anything else, build the interstate freeway system during the 1960s. But in the years following, I'd say about 1968, when most of the interstate system was finished, people regarded it as a job that had been done and didn't need to be done again, and they gradually forgot about it. And back in those years, the rate of the gasoline tax was adjusted every 2 or 3 years. It started out at 2 cents back in 1927 and gradually increased through 3 and 4 cents, and a 5-cent tax was sufficient to build the interstate freeways. But after that job was done, people kind of forgot about the necessity of keeping up with inflation and the cost of
right.
maintaining everything that had been built.
Sure. Well, I want to get to you folks very soon, but I want to ask Professor Ballard, who has an overview of the whole economy. We talk about regressive taxes, progressive taxes. In your viewpoint, from a standpoint that would most benefit the entire state of Michigan, how should we come up with the money that's needed for infrastructure?
Well, we've cut taxes so far, and we cut so many of our taxes that, honestly, I'd take an increase in almost any tax.
Right.
My favorite would be to institute a graduated income tax. Representative Wittenberg from southern Oakland County is one who's trying to get that on the ballot. It will not be on the ballot in 2016. It might be on the ballot at some later point.
That would require a constitutional amendment.
That would require a constitutional amendment, which is never easy. My other biggest favorite, for one thing, you got to go where the money is. If we raise a tax on popcorn, that's just not going to raise enough revenue to do much. So you got to go to the big revenue sources. I've spoken of the income tax. Another one that I have advocated for many, many years is to expand the sales tax to the entire economy. The sales tax in Michigan, as in most states, applies to very few services. So when I first started teaching about this at Michigan State back in the 80s, I would teach my students that about 3/5 of Michigan's economy was subject to the sales tax. And then for a long time I said that half of Michigan's economy is subject to the sales tax. And now it's about 3/8 of our economy is subject to the sales tax, year after year.
Is that because we're a more service-based economy?
Services have grown much more rapidly right. than the few things that are taxed, and thus we tax actually a minority of our economy. If you tax everything, you could actually have a substantial cut in the rate from 6% to something less, and you could still raise a lot more revenue.
So basically you're saying if I sell this young woman here my umbrella, she'll pay sales tax, but if I go and fix her plumbing, she won't.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
Jack, I think Grand Rapids did that about a year and a half ago. They raised their local income tax, and they're now spending $50 million a year on their transportation infrastructure. They're going to make Grand Rapids a world-class city. Whether or not we do it as a state, they're going to let things fall apart around them, and they're going to make their own area a world-class city with that money that they're raising on an income
that's
tax.
That's encouraging. One final thing. I wanted to, now, Arnie, if I understood you correctly, you said that the cost of fixing the roads properly, which would be about $3 billion, was about the same as the cost to the rest of us in letting them continue to deteriorate.
The hidden tax that you talked about, it comes out, depending on whose estimate you look at around $300 worth of just additional automobile repair costs per year, more or less, depending on how expensive a car you have, how much you drive. If you're fortunate enough to drive a BMW or something, you can fold up a $1,000 rim every few weeks sometimes. But that $300 in additional repair bills would be sufficient to double the contribution that we're all making to roads as we drive every day.
Well, I want to just ask really briefly these other two gentlemen, if they agree with you that there would be no net savings from spending the money to fix the roads, first of all.
I'm not an economist, so these guys know numbers better than I do, but I want to point out that that $3 billion number was a number from 2008. We've moved on at about a pace of about $100 million per year. We're falling further and further behind.
So about $3.8 million, if I do my billion. Okay. Dr. Ballard?
I got to believe that the cost of not doing anything is a lot greater than the cost of doing something. And part of that is, I mentioned the out-of-pocket cost associated with having your car fixed. But every day I have to dodge potholes. Every day I am unsuccessful in dodging some pothole somewhere, and my lower back takes the brunt of that. All of these costs are very difficult to measure precisely, but I really think that they add up to something. I mean, I just don't think that there's anybody in Michigan who thinks, this is the way our roads should be. yeah, this is really good. Let's keep it this way. Especially since I'm not, you guys know a lot more about the transportation engineering than I do, but as I understand it, the longer you let the roads go, the more it'll cost to fix them.
It's kind of like a cavity in your teeth. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
There's other costs associated with it as well. You know, you talk about agriculture. They're trying to get their product to market. The more our roads deteriorate, the more we pay for produce and other agriculture products because they're getting damaged, so they have to charge more for the stuff that actually makes it to market in good shape.
Arnie?
Yeah, much greater than the physical cost of damage to cars and so on. Nothing is more valuable than time. And there's dozens, hundreds of places around the road system where intersections should be improved, roads widened, signals changed, many things needed to speed up the flow of traffic over the roads. The example I like to use is the person whose job it is to come and fix the Xerox machine at your business, fix the plumbing at your house, someone who has to travel as a part of the job that they do every day. If their travel is slowed up to the point where instead of making 4 service calls a day, they can only come and fix 3 dishwashers or toilets or electrical boxes or whatever, we've just cut that person's wages by a third. And they have no choice but to make up that loss by raising their rates.
Well, I'm sure I could go on depressing you all night long, but I'd like to know what some of you folks might want to ask. So if you have a question, please raise your hand. This young lady right here. We're coming with a microphone here.
I would like to know why the warranties on construction aren't enforced, because like 15, 16 years ago here in town, 496, part of it was closed down, part of it was one lane, and yet now you travel it, and it's a piece of crap.
Who wants to take that one, Mike?
So I represent the contractors. Michigan has more warranties than most other states combined. In 1997, we began a program where there are warranties that are considered on a wide variety of construction practices. Now, there are some practices that are put in place, some construction that is done, that the construction industry can't be expected to put a full warranty on because the money isn't there for more than just putting a thin overlay on that road. We're just putting a Band-Aid on it. 496 was redone. I understand exactly what you're talking about. There was a 5-year warranty on that job, and the contractor came back and fixed any failures on that job. I think at times the public is given information about warranties that are far-reaching, but in the end, the industry does offer up more warranties here in Michigan, and there haven't been failures where the contractor hasn't come back and fixed them here in Michigan.
Arnie Froebaum, we hear a lot. People say to me a lot, we should just fix the roads, right? We should build roads as they do in Europe out of better materials so they last. Is this true?
Well, there's been a lot of research put into comparing Michigan practices, especially with what's done in Europe and a few other places. And it's true to some extent that the Europeans invest in longer-lived pavements than are normal in Michigan. But especially in comparing the projects that we actually built here in Michigan using German-style pavement designs, what's called stone mastic asphalt, and pavements built of extremely high quality and very high-cost materials, that at least here in the Michigan climate and in the Michigan geology, they're not really performing all that much better than the standard designs that we've been using. It is possible to make pavements last an extremely long time.
Would it make sense for us to do that?
maybe, maybe not. When the freeway system was initially built between about 1958 and 1966, the goal was to get the projects built and in service and producing for the economy just as fast as that as could be done. The interstate system was built with an expected pavement life of about 20 years, what we call the design life. In most cases, we got at least 30 and very frequently 40 years of service out of those pavements. And a lot of the original 1960s pavement is still in use around the state. We've done that by constant maintenance and reinvestment in the pavements that are out there. Now, it would be possible to drive those pavement lives into the 50, 60, maybe even 70-year range. But that would mean investing a lot more in the dirt under the road, literally raising the road up above the level of water. It would mean buying higher quality materials, literally different rocks that may not be available in Michigan to make the concrete out of. And it would mean investing maybe 100% more than we're paying right now for benefits that might not be received for one or even two generations into the future. And no pavement agency in the world that I know of has made that kind of investment, because we just don't know enough about what's going to be needed in the future to make that sacrifice of cash right now to build a road that may or may not be wanted by our children's children. So it's a very interesting question, but the answer is not clear.
To make that type of investment, we have 120,000 miles of roads here in Michigan.
Right.
We would be fixing about 15 miles a year. That's what we would be looking at. It's just not even possible to get 60, 70-year type of roads with the type of investment that we're making here in Michigan.
Next question. Gentleman back there, right back here.
I have a somewhat unusual question, but what about the lobbyists for the concrete and the asphalt industries? How come they aren't pushing like hell?
Well, are they pushing like hell?
Well, I guess I don't understand the question. We are all working together. I'm a lobbyist for the road industry. I have my vice president of government relations, who works for both the concrete and asphalt industry, here tonight. We're pushing for more funding. We worked hard with the legislature to try to get them to come up with a reasonable solution. Their solution was a phased-in one. We accepted that. The political reality of it was that in a term-limited era, in a conservative era, such as we're dealing with right now with Tea Party conservatism, a lot of pressure on those elected officials to make choices that don't affect the pocketbook. Make sure you take advantage of every penny that's coming in downtown. There's resources available.
In other words, we got the best lousy deal we could from an ideological legislature. That's what I thought. I want to ask another. I would shift. We'll get come back to you folks. But one thing we haven't talked at all about tonight is Flint and lead pipes, all of that. I wonder, Dr. Ballard, you're seeing the new mayor of Flint, Karen Weaver, has been talking about we need to replace all of these pipes. And we've been learning that there are lead pipes in most urban areas throughout Michigan. Realistically, what would be the cost of doing that, and does it make economic sense?
That's a very tough question, and a lot of the answer to that question depends upon engineering skills that I don't have. I don't think that we can quickly replace every pipe in Michigan.
Right.
I think, though, that we probably need to dramatically increase the speed at which we're trying to replace those pipes. And in terms of which ones would be the highest priority, you need to have the engineers take a very close look. My understanding is that in Flint, there are a lot of pipes that are much worse than others.
Right.
It's not like every pipe is in critical condition. And so I think we should really pull out all the stops to fix the ones that are the most critical, and then have a plan for the long term to eventually get them all done. But regardless of how fast we do it, I don't think the Tooth Fairy is going to come up with enough money for us to pay for it. And I get back to the central thing, which is unless we bring tax revenues to bear on this, it's just not going to happen for the roads, for the water infrastructure, for all sorts of things.
There's no such thing as a free lunch.
There is not a free lunch here. And the politics, of course, as you mentioned, are very difficult. Let me just tell a story, and I think I will not use the names of these people, but the conversation that I
Please
was
do.
Privy to among two prominent Republicans, one who was trying to get something done for the roads, and another one who was in the anti. And the one who was trying to get it done says, got to do something about the roads. Look, this is really important. And the other one says, I signed the no tax pledge. And then the other one says, well, look, you know, here's a road in your district. You probably drove on it last week when you were home in your district. The people at MDOT tell me that if we fix this right now, it'll cost $1 million. And if we wait for another so many years, it'll cost us $3 million. Now, will you explain to me how is it that you are saving the taxpayers' money by doing nothing? I signed the no tax pledge. And that was the answer to all questions. And almost 20% of our House of Representatives, I signed the no tax pledge is the answer to all questions. And as long as that is a powerful force in our legislature, it's going to be a real uphill battle to get done what we need.
I can see it was a mistake for me not to drink while I did this. Next question. Next, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for the mic. About 5 years ago, I was driving from Michigan to Minnesota, driving on some really nice highways in Wisconsin. And I heard an NPR story about how DARPA, it used to be called ARPA, but I guess it's DARPA again, has developed new pavement materials that are not...
This is the Pentagon's research agency. Is that what you're talking about?
That's right.
Yes.
The one that's well known for supposedly establishing the internet. But anyway... No, it was Al Gore. You're right. It was Al Gore. But anyway, apparently they have materials that are not German materials that can be made from North American rock that will drive the life of the average road surface up to about 80 years. I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, but you're probably the best person to address this. Is this true? Have you heard about such research?
Well, there's always a lot of work going into increasing the length of pavement life, but what this reminds me of is among automobile fans, years ago there always used to be a rumor of what was called the 200 mile per gallon carburetor, or a mysterious little green pill that you could drop into your gas tank and then fill the tank with water, and you could run your car on that. And we keep hearing about miraculous substances that will increase pavement life, but neither the research engineers nor the department nor Mike Nystrom's contractors have ever come across these things. In fact, the science of what it takes to build long-lived pavements is really pretty well known. If you use quality materials, if it's inspected properly to assure adherence to the standards, and most importantly, if you get it up above the groundwater so that it's not penetrated by water, then you can easily come up with pavements that'll last 40, 50, 60 years. But all it takes is money up front to build to that design.
There is a mysterious substance called money.
Well, to make the point, you were going through Wisconsin, their gas tax is 32 cents a gallon. Ours at the time was 19 cents a gallon. $45 million per penny is what we have coming in Michigan. If we had that 32 cents, we would have roads that are different.
Let me ask another quick question. We've talked about roads. We've talked about water pipes a little bit. And these are the areas that are getting the most attention in the media today. Are there other areas of Michigan's infrastructure that we ought to be concerned about that really haven't hit the radar screen yet? Anybody?
You know, there are. The governor has named the 21st Century Infrastructure Commission, looking at the broad range of infrastructure, ports, dams. I mean, there are a number of dams that are in rough shape and could affect things downstream. Charlie hit on it. I think it's an important point, I signed the no tax pledge. I'm gonna put it into a different perspective. I have another conservative good friend who is a supporter of infrastructure investment, Rich Studley from the Michigan Chamber of Commerce, and he uses an analogy that's pretty interesting. Everyone wants their sewers fixed. Everyone wants their water lines fixed. Everyone wants these roads and bridges fixed. They just don't want to have to pay for it. It's kind of like the person that says, I want to go to heaven. I just don't want to have to die to get there. It's a really good analogy. The bottom line is there's a whole bunch of things going on in our state that we don't truly understand. Think about the underground infrastructure. You started to touch on it, Jack. We are faced with a dilemma dealing with infrastructure right now, out of sight, out of mind. If the sewer goes out, if we flush our toilet and we wash our clothes and it goes out, it's fine. As long as it doesn't back up into our basement. If we have clean water, we have the public health, we know that our kids are getting the good water, we're happy with it. No one in any community wants to be the next Flint. And that's what Charlie's poll did here just a couple weeks ago. People are aware of infrastructure now. They are afraid of something like Flint happening to them. And now infrastructure has risen to number one. It overtook jobs in the economy for the first time since I've been doing this, and I started in 1990. It is always jobs in the economy, isn't it?
Right. You're referring to the State of the State survey, of which I'm the director, telephone interview survey of Michigan adults. And every year, once a year, we ask what's the most important problem facing the governor and the legislature. And for most of we've been in the field for 22 years now. For most of that time, roads and bridges were mentioned by so few people that we didn't have it as a separate category. And infrastructure. And then just in the last decade or so, enough people started saying roads and bridges, and then this time they said infrastructure, Flint water, and those kinds of things. And it rose to number one. So the public does, fortunately, have some attention focused on it. I wish it didn't take lead in the bodies of Flint's children to get us to focus our attention, but it...
Well, you know, the first Mayor Daley, the great political boss of Chicago, once said, you don't get no political credit by fixing stuff below the surface. You build a skyscraper, you get votes. You fix the sewers, nobody notices until they have to. Next question. Let's see. This gentleman right here has been very patient.
Thank you. Yeah, hi. I also work for the Department of Transportation, quite a little bit down on the food chain from Arnie. I would just say that those of us that work for MDOT have been working without a lot and squeezing every penny we can and very conscientious about it, I think Arnie would agree, as best we can in these tough times. One thing, I've listened to Jack and Professor Ballard for years talk about the fact that, especially when all those potholes were popping up, that the public was screaming out, saying, do something, do something. And like you said, the legislatures were, no tax pledge, no tax pledge. Well, speaking of skyscrapers, we now have somebody leading the Republican Party who, for whatever you want to say about him, doesn't believe in no new taxes, has mentioned that he advocates infrastructure. Do you, Jack, as a political expert, do you think that Trump at the head of the ticket might get some of the Republicans down the street to have a little cover to maybe do something more responsible?
I have concluded after this year's race for the presidency that I'm no longer a political expert of any kind. But what What I will say is that even if Donald Trump were to be elected president, no crossing yourself, especially those of you who are Jewish, even if Donald Trump were to be elected president and maintain this as a policy position, it would have little to no effect over the Michigan legislature. But one can always dream. Did you, Dr. Ballard?
One thing that I would like to point out, and so far I don't think we've achieved a critical mass either with Donald Trump or with anybody else to do what needs to be done for the roads. But I notice in the current presidential campaign, more than in any other in my lifetime, there's a nativist, xenophobic, there's a great deal, especially from Trump, but also Secretary Clinton has greatly moderated her views toward engaging with the rest of the world. There's a whole lot of, these gosh darn foreigners stealing our American jobs. Well, I, as an economist, hope we don't go too far down that road, because if we get into a full-fledged trade war, it will cause a worldwide depression, and that won't make anybody better off. But there is a way to take that nativist sentiment and turn it to the advantage in terms of the infrastructure and the issue, and that is that if we have a campaign, if we really pull out all the stops to fix our infrastructure, those jobs are not going to be outsourced. The jobs that are necessary to fix the sewers and the school buildings, Jack, you asked about others. I would also put school buildings on the list. To fix all those things, those are going to be done by construction workers from here. We're not going to bring in construction workers from Malaysia. Right. We might bring in T-shirts made in Malaysia, but the actual
very
infrastructure
good point.
Work is going to be done by local folk.
That's an optimistic note. Somebody, there's a gentleman all the way in the back there under the sign that says specials. I don't know if that pertains to him or not, but...
Doesn't this whole revenue problem go back to this might be for Dr. Ballard because he specializes in this, but doesn't this go back to Nixon and New Federalism, where we're going to cut the amount of money that goes to states, give them more quote-unquote freedom to spend it, less restrictions but less money? Is that where we begin this trace, or am I off base on that?
Well, I think in terms of the chronology, you're about right, because the decrease in tax revenues in Michigan started, so far as I can tell in the data, during the Nixon administration. But I would not blame anybody in Washington for this. I would blame us right here in Lansing, because the key thing that I look at is, forget about what we get from Washington. What percentage of our economy do we devote to state and local taxes? And in 1972, that number was a little bit more than 13% of our personal income went to state and local taxes. And now that's the last time that I did the numbers, and the numbers, there is a data lag from the census of governments. But anyway, the last time I did it was for 2012. It was below 10%. Well, each percentage point of our personal income is about $4 billion. So if you've gone down from 13 to 10,
$12 billion.
That's $12
Four
billion.
Times what Arnie said would be needed to fix the roads.
It's enough to, hey, and by the way, if you had even half that much money, you could cut my students' tuition in half, because we could go back to the long ago world in which the state government was actively involved in supporting higher education.
I'll come to you, but I believe Nixon's new federalism actually wanted to give the states more money. He wanted to decrease federal power, but I think Nixon, I have to be in the position of defending Nixon here, he actually wanted to give the states more money via revenue sharing, which of course no longer happens. Michael?
Jack, focusing in on the Flint issue and the challenges we have with our underground infrastructure, there was a big federal effort that took place in the 70s into the early 80s. It died off in the mid-80s. In the last 15 to 20 years, we've stopped spending it as a state as well. You can look at numbers. Yes, we've given out loans to local communities through the DEQ
to improve their sewer systems and their clean drinking water. But that amount that we are spending out of the general fund has gone down to zero. Those tens of millions of dollars that we're spending each year in loans is being circled back to the state through the state revolving fund, being paid for by communities, not by the state. So sure. Both state and federal have dwindled their funding of our underground infrastructure.
Arnie, do you want to comment?
Yeah, the Congress has kind of lost the thread the same way that the state legislatures have, too. The federal gas tax has not been changed since... I can't recall for sure.
It was Ronald Reagan.
It's
back during the Pleistocene era.
Yeah. And the money that is collected, the tendency is always to dissipate it over many more programs than it can really support. The flow of federal motor fuel taxes that used to pay for the interstate system is now spread over a much larger catalog of programs than just the main highways. So not only is the amount not rising, it's being spread thinner.
I want to ask you all a metaphysical question, which is not really in what we're the business of doing here. But from everything you've said tonight, it seems that this country and the state has lost its way in a sense that for years, Americans always believed their kids should have it better than they did. We believed in investing for the future. And what I'm hearing from all three of you gentlemen is that the behavior of government as regards infrastructure has been more or less totally irrational. Does anybody have an idea why that is or if they see any sign of that stopping?
I think as far as Michigan is concerned, we're actually doing a few things right. I look at this Flint thing. We have an opportunity to turn Flint around and make it better than it ever was before. Absolutely. And if we use it as an example, we have an opportunity to make other communities across our state much better as well by using it as an example to motivate the local citizens to support infrastructure investment. We are also doing things well with an asset management concept. We take a look at the product that we have with regard to our roads and our bridges. And it starts at the local level. It started back in 1997. It's grown to a statewide program. We now have to apply that template to our sewers and our water lines. If the state legislature uses that as the one idea, we'll get the basis of what we have out there. We'll understand where the needs are, and that's where we place the investment. We can't ask the citizens of the state to just throw money at this problem. We actually have to understand the problem first and then put forth the investment that's needed.
Charlie, don't we understand the problem?
Some of us understand the problem. I think a lot of the
obviously
people...
I don't. Charlie does.
No, you understand the problem. I think a lot of the folks in this room understand the problem. Of course, we're preaching to the choir. One of the things that I've found in working with survey research data is that there is a tremendous portion of the population who are profoundly badly informed about all sorts of basic facts about the economy. Here's one of my favorites. You've got a lot of folks who say we need to cut federal spending because we all waste so much money on foreign aid. So the Pew Center, I think it was the Pew Center, asked, what percentage of the federal budget goes to different categories? And the average respondent said 28% of the federal budget goes to foreign aid. The correct number is about 1%. And so if you've got people, and I could go on and on and on.
Right.
If you've got people who have an extraordinarily distorted view of what the facts on the ground are, which distorted view, by the way, is pumped up by folks on talk radio and elsewhere, that makes it that much more difficult to get sensible policy.
So, in other words, the media is sort of failing society.
What is Mr. Trump called you folks in the media? The scurrilous, disgusting people. But I wouldn't.
We knew that. Next question. Let's see here. How about is there any women here? Lady right? Okay, this person right here. Where?
Of course, you did it while I'm chewing. Okay, everybody, you guys are talking about
we need to spend more. How and what do we spend it on? I'm an all aspects commuter. Car, bike, walking, public transit. Are we going to repeat the same mistakes we've been doing for 50 years, encouraging sprawl?
Let me rephrase. Let me refocus your question. You're asking about, you're the first person to ask about mass transit, correct?
Correct.
Some kind of mass transit. Talk about mass transit.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Me too. Go ahead, Arnie.
The list of things that the transportation system has to accomplish is almost unimaginably long unless you've thought about it. The road system that carries cars also has to deliver buses, carry pedestrians, get them across the road safely. It has to carry bicycles, which are allowed to use the roads in the same fashion as automobiles. It has to deliver the garbage truck that carries away everything you put at the curb once a week. It brings the fire truck to your house, hopefully without being held up in traffic. It delivers freight to the factory that you work at. You know, a couple blocks south of us are people frantically assembling Cadillacs. All those parts got there by truck. There's probably 80 or 90 or 100 functions that have to go into the road system. This is why the state of Michigan adopted what we call the complete streets philosophy toward road design a couple of years ago. And all these uses have to be accomplished simultaneously, and all without imposing delay and waste and congestion and accident risk on any one class of user.
That's certainly true, but there are some forms of mass transit, Charlie Ballard, rail, light rail, other forms that wouldn't use existing roads. Does it make economic sense to pour more money into various forms of mass transit? For example, the RTA, the proposal that would have a fleet of rapid buses and special lanes trucking people around metropolitan Detroit.
Well, I'm not a Well, all right, applause for that. Transportation economics is not my main area. I would point out, for better or worse, we for the last half century or more, all across America, not just in Michigan, we have had a whole bunch of policies that have encouraged very low-density development. And we're way spread out. And there are places in Michigan where a rail system just isn't going to work. But in Metro Detroit, maybe some kind of rail and fast bus. I think we could move in our urban areas. We could really move a long way toward greater efficiency through public transportation. In the rural areas, people are still going to drive cars and pickups.
Michael Nystrom, somebody once told me that mass transit, people really regarded mass transit the way I do diet and exercise. It's a great idea for somebody else. That I want those options to be there, but I want the convenience of my private car. What's your perspective from where you sit?
I think as a whole, the 10 million Michiganders tend to think that way because we are a very spread out geographical area. Charlie just hit on it. It doesn't work well. It's not cost effective in the rural areas.
Right.
In those urban areas like Grand Rapids, the Metro Detroit area, it certainly does make sense, and we have to support it. Those folks that think that that's going to work for us as a state as a whole and we disinvest in roads, that's just not going to happen because when they tip over on their bike because they hit a pothole, the ambulance isn't going to get there on time, just like Arnie just said.
Next question. Let's see here. That gentleman with the suit back there.
I've been waiting all night for this policy question. So going back to this no tax pledge, I think maybe we need to invest in our educational system to have the next set of leaders understand the common sense, why we need to have roads, the cost-benefit analysis. But I do want to talk about, we were talking about mass transportation. It would be so great, Mr. Lessenberry, you took a while to get up here. It would be great to have a mass transit train. You could have come from Ann Arbor up to Lansing.
It would be nice to have one to my vacation home in Charlevoix, too, but they don't seem to be building it.
I agree. So the challenge that the road builders are, why aren't they reinventing themselves like Ford Motor Company to saying, why aren't you pushing yourselves to say, we want to be a transportation or mobile company? Go to Europe. You're on time with trains. You're on time with air transportation.
But you're suggesting, say, that Ford Motor Company reinvent itself.
It's already identified itself as a mobility company.
As a mobility company. What are the economics?
Doing that here? Why aren't we pushing the lobbyists and these companies pushing themselves to saying, stop building a new road, stop building into green space, and say, go for density. It's all about policy.
I want to give everybody a chance to respond, but first of all, Dr. Ballard, would that make economic sense as the world works now?
As the world works now, no, because the world is turned sideways now. But I think for the longer term, this is certainly the direction in which we need to go. For a lot of these things, the economics are really simple, but the politics are incredibly hard. And mobilizing the public understanding and the public will to try to have a more efficient transportation system, that's a long-term challenge, and one that all of us will probably be working on it's not going to be fixed by next week, that's for sure.
Michael.
I think there is a movement towards it, and I would tell your producer to make sure they never let go of the microwave or the microphone. That's always a challenge. But in the end, our industry is reinventing itself. We have contractors who are building the railways. We are doing that here in Michigan. We are looking at ways to have high-speed rail. It's not cheap. It's not self-supporting. That's the biggest challenge. I think if you look into it and you look into it deeply, Amtrak is not paying for itself here in Michigan. It's not. And that's the biggest challenge. So
I don't think it is anywhere.
We can't continue to expand a bad program just because it sounds good.
Arnie, what's the MDOT perspective on that?
Well, we're trying to make the investments that make sense for whatever the situation and the location is. There's never going to be a passenger train to Alpena or Charlevoix or Sault Ste. Marie again. But there ought to be a way for people to get around the state without necessarily owning their own car.
What would that way be?
Well, we may see it happening already. One of the things that astonishes me is the rate of change that's occurring in computer-dispatched taxis, public transportation, shared rides, whatever you want to call it. The mass transit system of the future may be much different than simply running an Amtrak train or a bus up and down Michigan Avenue here. It may involve driverless dispatched vehicles. And when I say the future, it may be only a very few years from now. I think, in fact, within the next few weeks, you will probably see legislative movement that will make Michigan one of the first states to have completely unrestricted operation of driverless and autonomous cars authorized here. We want to make sure that Michigan is the place where this all the research to make that possible.
Well, that's exciting. That's exciting. Somebody else, another question. How about this gentleman right here? This gentleman right here in black or dark blue.
Okay. Hi, I was just wondering, I'm sure you've all seen projects that were installed. It seemed like there was poor engineering or they just made a mistake while they were installing the infrastructure. how much money would be saved if there was just better oversight on the projects that were constructed in Michigan?
So you're asking how much could be saved technically by just quality control measures?
I'm going to leave that to you guys. I don't know.
I don't know if you could assign a dollar value to how much more quality improvement there is to be squeezed out of the system. As we've talked a little bit already, there are warranties in place on most of the large-scale projects in Michigan. There's department standards and local government and federal standards governing every bit of construction that's undertaken.
To the chase, what he really was too polite to ask, but I have no manners. It's not true that there's all sorts of lazy, inefficient MDOT workers who are not doing a good job.
No, there aren't, and there aren't on the part of the private construction contractors either.
Right. Great.
Jack, could I ask a question?
Yes.
So this is a question where I'm asking a question by way of engaging in a little bit of nostalgia. My grandfather grew up in a house on South Washington Avenue in Ypsilanti. And he was born in 1896. And when he got to be 18 years old, he was admitted to the University of Michigan. And he didn't live in Ann Arbor. He stayed at home in Ypsilanti and commuted to college on the Washtenaw Avenue streetcar. And, of course, there isn't a Washtenaw Avenue streetcar anymore. But we were talking earlier about the transportation systems in Europe, where many cities have trolleys and streetcars. And my question for the engineers and the transportation folks who know a lot more about it than I do is there a future for that kind of mode in Michigan?
For traditional streetcars, not much. That's a technology that was invented in the 1890s, and virtually every city, not only in North America, but in England and in much of Europe and much of the rest of the world, pretty much abandoned streetcars between the 1930s and the 1950s in favor of buses.
Is there a modified thing, what used to be called an interurban, some kind of thing like he's talking about?
Yeah, they called it the Ypsi-An, the old interurban that connected Ypsilanti with Ann Arbor. But most rail systems were abandoned in favor of buses simply for the reason that you don't have to fix all those rails and ties under the street. Now, of course, Woodward Avenue in Detroit and about 25 other cities around the country have already installed or are in the process of installing usually relatively small-scale streetcar systems that provide a real agreeable mode of circulation around certain neighborhoods in certain cities. We've ridden them in places like New Orleans and San Francisco and elsewhere. But the technology that we're probably going to see in Michigan, and in fact we're already seeing it on Division Street in Grand Rapids, is bus rapid transit, where you get most of the benefits of a traditional streetcar line without the cost of building a railroad down the street. And plus, when somebody double parks in the middle, you can drive the bus around it, which you can't with a streetcar.
Michael Nystrom, you have a perspective on that? Nope? Great. Okay. Are there any women who want to ask any questions? No? Somebody really waving over there? Young lady right there. By the way, Charlie, don't feel too bad. Your grandfather wouldn't be able to afford to go to U of M today.
Hi. My understanding is that our load limits for semis in Michigan is one of the highest in the United States. How much does this affect roads? And what could we do in terms of stopping that?
So you're asking, Do we allow semis to be too heavy? Are they heavier than other states, and are they grinding our roads to rubble?
The limits are too high.
Okay.
Also.
Yes. What do you folks think? Let's start with the transportation guy.
The maximum a truck can weigh in Michigan is about 164,000 pounds. The five-axle trucks that constitute most of the truck volume all over the country, what they call an interstate standard semi, is a total of 80,000 pounds. But of those two trucks, the Michigan truck is actually the less destructive to highway pavements because those Michigan trucks ride on 11 axles. The typical, most Michigan trucks are seldom over 145,000 pounds. And the weight limit, assuming I remember the numbers right, those Michigan trucks have individual axles that carry about 17,000 pounds.
But is she right? Should we decrease that limit?
No, not the gross vehicle weight limit. What we need to be doing is trying to get more of those nationwide trucks to adopt the Michigan standard where there's more axles under the same weight.
To sort of diffuse the weight. Michael?
The actual per-axle weight is 13,000 pounds per axle in Michigan. The national ones that he's talking about is 19,000 pounds. So it's kind of more weight being put down on the road with each single axle. You know, what's interesting is you see those neighborhoods with the signs that have the black truck, and it's a big circle, a red circle, and no trucks. Those same roads are falling apart in every neighborhood across the state.
So are you saying Michigan is actually better off than most states?
Per axle-wise, absolutely.
Yeah, the Michigan truck weight limits are really unique. The other 49 states are quite a bit different. And this is one area where the rest of the country really does need to listen to Europe, where the axle weight limits are less, but the trucks actually weigh more than they do in the United States. So those high-quality foreign pavements are actually carrying much heavier trucks than are normal in the United States.
Wonderful. Charlie, do you want to add anything? Or
no.
This gentleman right here. Hey, the microphone. Oh, okay. He's big.
All right. Well, now you can't take it.
We're sharing.
And I have two questions. I wanted to talk about rail infrastructure because I kind of think you lightweighted that answer. Europe still runs lots of trolleys and streetcars. Now, it may be true that they're heavily subsidized. That may be the model we need. And Americans don't like to subsidize anything. But for rail to work, it needs to be subsidized. Also, I believe, if I understand right, cars or trucks or roads are subsidized, too, in ways we don't even know about. And that's the claim of most rail enthusiasts, is they're not being dealt a fair hand, that cars get subsidies that are not tracked.
So are you asking, would it make economic sense for us to subsidize rail and trolleys and things like that? Is that your question, essentially?
Yes, and do we have the moxie to do it?
Well, that's a separate question. First of all, does it make economic sense to do it? Let's start with Dr. Ballard.
I think I'm going to have to defer to the transportation guys here.
The way transportation is financed, it's typically the auto and truck user that are paying the freight for everyone right now. It's often said that the highway system is subsidized from various sources, but generally speaking, it isn't. When you pay your 25-cent Michigan gas tax and about $100 a year in auto registration tax, you're paying not only for the entire Michigan road system, almost all of it, but you're bringing the transit rider along as a free rider. And that's okay, because those systems do indeed need to be subsidized in order to provide access for people who aren't able to make use of the automotive system. Now, the rail system, we've talked a little bit about local street railways, which is an extremely high cost and relatively low capacity system. The inner city railroad system doesn't have quite so high a demand for subsidy, but like Mike said, every Amtrak ticket has to be matched by about an equivalent amount of tax money from somewhere. So the when you fill up your car and pay your fuel tax, you're covering maybe a third of the cost of the transit system. The rest of it comes from the users as they pay their fares, and also from local property taxes.
Michael Nystrom, do you have a perspective on that?
You know, I you used a word, and I'm not picking on it. Enthusiasts, rail enthusiasts. I don't think we can look at that as a program. As Arnie said, we are bringing in about $3 billion a year, $1 billion in gas and diesel taxes, about $1 billion a year in registration fees, and about $1 billion a year from the federal government. That's what we're using as our budget right now on an annual basis. 8% of that is going to transit. And we are subsidizing transit right now. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it as the road builder representative. However, in the end, we need to find a way for those users of that system, because that's how we pay for our transportation system across the nation. That's how we pay for our infrastructure across the nation. It's a user fee basis concept. If we want to use the system, we need to pay for it. And the users of rail and that type of system are not paying for it fully. That's all I'm saying.
One more question. Let's see. This lady right here. Hang on a second. The microphone's coming.
Thank you. So this is a question for Charlie Ballard. If we keep trying to have the state respond to our infrastructure needs, and we call our Congress, our state representatives, and say, tax us more, please. And that's not going to happen. Can't we move instead to a more regional component of taxation? For example, if Grand Rapids can tax themselves for roads, if Lansing Board and Water of Light can increase tax rates or ratepayer fees to replace water lines to get rid of lead piping, which Lansing City did, if we can increase school mills as much as we can, depending on what the limitations are by the state legislators, if we can do regional taxation to support the DIA or Cobo Center, can't we just, like, make David Hollister the guru for regional taxation?
Are you asking whether the solution is to devolve into regional solutions, forget the state just by region?
Well, at least up to a point, I like the idea. Certainly, if the state legislature won't act, then you think, okay, well, let's see if anybody will act. I'm not convinced that the state legislature is hopeless, especially if we were to. We've talked a little bit earlier today about term limits. Which is better for Michigan, term limits or carpet bombing? I'm not really
not quite
sure. My other one is the gerrymandering of the legislative districts, which really, and why we have not. We've had all sorts of ballot initiatives on all sorts of silly things, and we still haven't seen our ballot initiative on gerrymandering of legislative districts, which I think is really unfortunate. So I think that the legislature is not beyond hope, but in the current legislature is pretty close to beyond hope. And so if we look down the road and say, what do we do? Certainly, if you can get Metro Detroit to work together, that's a big if. But if you can, then regional. There are a lot of problems to which regional solutions are the ones that make the most sense. I hate to go only to region, because that would mean, I think, a lot of regions in the state would be left behind, and I certainly hope that the state as a whole, but...
Arnie, you wanted to say something about that.
Sure.
Yeah, Mike used a word that hasn't been mentioned much so far, and that's user fee. And really, it's probably inevitable that some of these expenditures are going to devolve onto the regional and local levels. Because it is a legitimate question to ask, should we be collecting all this money, sending it to Lansing, and then trusting the legislature to redistribute it to, in Michigan, there are, let's see, I always forget these numbers, but it's 515 local road agencies, 83 county road commissions, 80 transit agencies, plus MDOT, for a total of 697 transportation agencies. And then, of course, there's sewer districts, airports, water districts, schools.
Well, now that you've established we need more units of government, I want to come back real quickly. I want Michael Nystrom to talk about this whole user fee.
So, you know, actually, to your point, I think there is a regional concept that can work. I think when you look at this underground issue that we have going on, and it is a big one, we continue to glaze over it even in this conversation. We have a serious issue. It's actually, I believe, as serious as our road issue. I think that the state has to have involvement in it. I think the way you get the regional involvement is this governor, it was mentioned by one of these gentlemen over here, he has decided to use general fund dollars, $160, $180 million he's proposed in his current budget for the coming year. If there is state money available, first time in 20 years that state general funds are available, it will incentivize locals if you give it to them as a shared concept. We'll give you 20% of your project. You take that to your voters and allow them to decide if they want to increase their own user fees. So locally, we increase our user fees somehow, some way, and we take advantage of state dollars. That's how you sell that. As a voter, you tell them, we have an opportunity to lose this $10 or $20 million in state money that's being given to us for free out of the general fund to fix our system here at home. People will tend to vote for that. People vote for things. If you think about millages that are going on, they pass at a rate of about 83% if folks understand what they're voting for. If they know what they're going to get out of the vote, out of the money that they're paying for, they tend to support it. If it's some, hey, send it to some big white building in downtown Lansing and we'll take care of it for you, it's going to go down in flames, guaranteed.
Let me, we're getting close to the end of our time, and I want to ask all our panelists to respond to this. Do you see any sign that our leaders are finally, are any closer to doing realistic, serious things about addressing our infrastructure? Charlie?
Well, certainly, it took the governor a very long time, apparently, to be aware that there was an issue in Flint. But once he became aware that there was an issue in Flint, we've actually seen some baby steps in the right direction. So I think, and also we talked about earlier the public awareness. This has risen to the top of the public's agenda. And so, I don't think that we're anywhere close to solving the issues, but I'd rather be moving in the right direction than not moving at all. Yeah.
Michael?
You know, I saw a quote from Winston Churchill. He said a long time ago, you can always count on Americans to do the right thing once they've exhausted all other options. We tend to react to tragedy. We react to crisis in America, and it happens here in Michigan with a term-limited legislature even more so. This situation in Flint, the situation with our roads and bridges, you know you're coming home from spring break when you cross the state line. It's a sad state of affairs. We're turning business away. Right now, Flint is in an economic crisis. Property values are plummeting. There isn't a developer or a commercial consideration going on in Flint right now. People are turning away from there. They're doing the same thing with regard to our roads here in Michigan. Folks are looking to bring plants here. They come here for a visit. They drive on our potholes. They cross our bridges, and they say, no way in hell am I going there. We're moving someplace else. It's a sad state of affairs. We've got to look further into the future for the next generation, for the next economy for Michigan.
And let's let the Rajah of roads here, Arnie, have the last word.
Yeah, I've been working with this issue even longer than Mike, and I've I've seen several cycles of enthusiasm for infrastructure. It's an obscure word that you don't hear too often, except when it bubbles to the surface. And I noticed that we filled an entire bar here full of people who wanted to hear about pavement and pipes. And that's probably significant. I don't think it just took the disaster in Flint to bring this to the surface. We did see some action out of the legislature last year on this issue, and I don't think it's over with. Certainly not in the water and utility area, and I don't think even in the road area. I don't think we're done with this issue.
I don't know that we'll ever be done with this issue. Could you give our experts a big hand for giving their evening up for us? And to the extent I have a heart at all, it's warmed by the fact that all you folks came out tonight to talk about these very serious and important issues. Steve, do you have any final remarks to make? Nope. Well, go on eating, drinking. If you can, buttonhole one of our experts before they flee. You're welcome to do that. But thank you all very much. I hope we'll see a lot of you in Ann Arbor. Take care.